Alrighty, welcome back in. Hour number two of our radio program. It is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. Cool thing happened in New York City this weekend, and you could attend the Zimmer Biomet APP New York City Open at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. And you could see Zimmer Biomet, the leader in knee replacement technology, talk about sports injuries and advancements in knee replacement surgeries. This is not your grandmother's medicine, and the innovation this group is bringing to patients is great. People living with knee pain should talk to their doctors. If you don't have a doctor, you could locate more information from Zimmer Biomet at www.pickleballknee.com. That's once again www.pickleballknee.com. And you got pickleball, you got knee surgeries going on. So when I think of pickleballs, I think of knees. I think of Solomon Wilcox, who played in the NFL for a long time. Now, this is a great job of SiriusXM NFL Radio and Dr. Roshan Shah here in studio with us. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
Doing great, Zach. Good to be on with you today.
Yeah, I appreciate you coming in. So let me start you off with your Bengals, and then we'll talk about the knees, and we'll talk about pickleball. We'll do all that great jazz towards the end of the conversation. So I look at this the last 2 years. They paid Burrow.
Yeah.
They got Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins both done this offseason, which I didn't think was going to happen. I thought T was going to be out the door. And then you got Trey Hendrickson on a defense, and let's be real, it's not a good defense right now, but back-to-back years, 17 and a half sacks. Mm-hmm. And he's frustrated because he doesn't have a new deal yet. Yeah. But what do you think ultimately happens there? Because I struggle with this because I want to say, oh, they'll find a way to get a deal done because they found a way to figure it out last year. Yeah. But this is now getting really ugly and contentious.
Well, it can get done. It's not like they don't have the space on the salary cap to get it done. They do. This is about, they're kind of stuck on the age. He's 30, 31 years of age. Do you sign him for 2-3 years? And at what point do you start to see some decline during this contract? And so that's where they're kind of stuck. I would just say to Cincinnati Bengals ownership group, that today's 30-year-old players is not like 10 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. We're seeing players play well beyond that because they're investing more in their bodies. They're not even going two-a-days. This is not like 10 years ago. So the wear and tear at 30 years of age, you can no longer use the metrics that you used 10, 15 years ago. At the same time, this is a guy who has produced over the last 2 years as well or maybe even better than any other edge player on defense in the National Football League. More sacks, more pressures. He has a higher percentage of the team's pressure than any other player has for their team. That's better than Myles Garrett. That's better than T.J. Watt. Better than Danielle Hunter. So he should come in right around $30 to $35 million a year. And you and I both know the top three guys, Max Crosby, Danielle Hunter, and then Myles Garrett at the top, they're all averaging right around $37 million a year. So they got to come a long way to put him in that category.
Here's the other thing. In the landscape of the AFC right now, mm-hmm. Chiefs, Bills, Ravens, would you agree, are the three best teams right now in the AFC?
Yeah, in terms of total team, the quarterback, the offense, play on defense, coaching staff. Yeah, I would agree.
So then who would be fourth? Because most people still think it's the Bengals because a few years ago, right, mm-hmm. they beat the Chiefs in the AFC championship game. You look around, Chargers, Broncos had nice seasons, but I don't think they're ready to take that next step. The Texans, I think they're good, but I wouldn't call them great, and they just lost to Kansas City where their defense was great, but their offense did nothing. No one really else stands out to me in the AFC East. So are the Bengals the fourth best team in the AFC?
I think they deserve to be mentioned in that space, but those teams you also just mentioned, Denver, the LA Chargers, I think those teams also can be mentioned in that space. The Houston Texans. Remember this time last year? We all had Houston being
Super Bowl contender.
Maybe the best team in the AFC that we kind of saw them taking that next step. I think what it shows you is that you got to stay healthy. I think you've got to continue to battle. Even a team like the Buffalo Bills probably had a better season last year than any, but end up with the same end result, mm-hmm. right? Because you got to stay good enough to be in those games at the end, but you're going to have to break through. You're going to have to go through all those really good teams. The Bengals have to go through the Ravens twice. They're going to have to go through Kansas City. You're going to have to still beat a Chargers team that is ascending and only getting better, right, with Jim Harbaugh. And I do believe the Denver Broncos, that defense is, I think, one of the best defenses in the NFL. They led the league in sacks. They just got better in the secondary with Jahdae Barron, the Thorpe Award winner from the University of Texas, coming in as a nickel corner. I think on the back end and their secondary is going to match the front end in terms of pressure. Vance Joseph, a good friend of mine, their defensive coordinator, is an ascending coach who I think is going to interview as one of the next head coaches in the NFL. So Denver, I think, is a really good team that you have to be concerned about entering that upper echelon in the AFC.
It's funny. You talk about guys that could become coaches again. Someone that was like the bell of the ball this offseason, Assam Wilcott's in the studio with us, is Ben Johnson.
No doubt.
Ben Johnson's already starting to annoy me. What he said about the tush push the other day, I only like explosive plays. Like, hey, first downs are pretty good for me. Touchdowns are pretty good for me.
Yeah.
There is a real confidence and arrogance with Ben Johnson.
Yeah.
And one press conference I saw the other day, I'm already like, I'm out on this guy. I can't stand him.
Well, I can tell you right now, I watched him call games last year.
It's unbelievable.
It was fun. Yeah. And you know what they did? They did fun things. And this is like, it's like Andy Reid. Andy Reid makes playing football for him. If you're an offensive player playing for him, you love Andy Reid because he's going to create some kind of design that's allowing guys to do the things that they all talk about in practice, that they're talking about in meetings. And what did Ben Johnson do last year? They ran six offensive linemen, right, formations, more than anybody else, right? So if you're Dan Skipper, you love Ben Johnson, right?
And trust me, I grew up playing offensive line. That's a dream when they would like to try to catch the football.
How many trick plays did they run last year? And they were successful. So he's not afraid to be wrong. He's not afraid to do the thing that I've seen coaches. We can't do that. Why can't you? He is more proactive and empowering his players and his team because it is a game. It's supposed to be fun. Let's allow the players to have fun. So now let's see if he can transfer that to the Chicago Bears because we've never seen offense run like that in Chicago.
No, you've never seen a 4,000-yard passer. They've only had a 4,000-yard passer in their dreams. But I'll tell you, the guy is phenomenal as an offensive coordinator.
We've seen
great coordinators. They just don't be great head coaches. Maybe he is going to be great. Hey, Dan Campbell came in talking a big game, and he turned that team around.
That's right.
With Ben Johnson, I just wonder, and I don't know him, but I just wonder, does he think he's the smartest guy in the room because he passed on the Commanders, they whooped his team in the playoffs, and now, okay, you're going after the Eagles with the tush push stuff, and it just gives me smartest guy in the room vibes.
The smartest guy in the room.
Chip Kelly kind of vibes.
See, there you go. This game has humbled some great people.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm talking players, and I'm talking coaches. I have a great coach by the name of Dick LeBeau, Hall of Famer. He says, sometimes you get the bear, sometimes the bear gets you. If you're around this game long enough, you're going to have days where you're going to have to go and rethink everything that you thought you knew, because there's going to come a time when all of the things that you thought you had answers to, you're going to find out you don't have answers at all. And I think one of the biggest things for coaches where you have to be careful, because you begin to think that it's about your scheme, it's about your design, right? And it's about the players. Because those X's and O's don't move by themselves. Those are human beings. We have to turn those X's and O's or turn those ideals into real moments. So without a Jared Goff, without a Jahmyr Gibbs, without a Sam Laporta, what do you got, right? Without one of the best offensive lines in football, right, with Penei Sewell and some of the other guys, what do you really got? So that's what he has to rebuild in Chicago. And he's going to have to do it with his set of players, not with the ones that he was using in Detroit.
And I don't know if there's a more intriguing team in the NFL this year than Chicago, because you got the quarterback, who Daniels was better than Caleb Williams last year. You got Roma Dunze, who's now his second season. He's got to start to break out. DJ Moore is incredibly underrated. Now you have a 1-2 punch at the tight ends with Kmet and also Colston Loveland, who they drafted. Mm-hmm. And that's a team. It's not crazy to say they should be 10-7 and right in the mix this year.
Yeah.
But we were also saying that last year about Chicago, and they failed miserably.
And I heard Ben Johnson say this today. He said, my job really, if I'm going to help Caleb Williams, is get him to trust me. As it turns out, in Seth Wickersham's book, he didn't trust the last coaching staff.
I don't blame him, if I'm being honest.
And he didn't listen. So what happened? Highest sack total of any quarterback last year in the NFL with a season high 68 sacks. There's tape where he's running around with the ball and coming out of his break, DJ Moore is wide open. But the quarterback, Caleb Williams, running around with the ball. You know what DJ Moore did when sat down on the bench? In the middle of a play. I never saw that before in all my years of watching NFL football. You know what that told me? The receivers grew impatient with their quarterback who's not running the play the way that it was designed to be run, that he tends to take things into his own hands. So you can't put it all on the coaching staff from 1 year ago. He's got to take some ownership for holding the ball too long. He's got to take some ownership for getting the ball out at the designated time. Playing in rhythm is how we describe it. And I think that's what Ben Johnson has to be able to get him to do. It's not something he did at USC. It's not something he practiced last year. He's a player that tends to fall back onto what he's most comfortable with as opposed to taking the risk of growing and doing things differently than he has in the past.
Here's the other thing, and since you're a former NFL player, Solomon Wilcots, you know the league is better than anybody. I read that article, and when I'm reading the article, something that stood out to me was the coaches didn't tell Caleb Williams how to watch film. Do you need to be told how to watch film as a rookie?
First of all, I do think that you need to be taught how to watch film. So what are you looking for?
Yeah.
So when I'm sitting with, so say you're the quarterback, I'm the coach, and I would say, okay, you see how right here, okay, what's our first read here? And then I would want to hear him say it. And if he didn't say it, I'd be like, okay, so your eyes are here. Here's your first read. Okay, here's what you should be looking, because this is what, when that safety rotates down in the box, clearly they're in man coverage. Look at the corners are creeping up. You're going to get single high man coverage. Right now, there's not anything to really read here. Do you have them all blocked up? If you don't have them all blocked up, ball's got to come out quick. If you have them all blocked up, you got a little bit of time. But you should probably be thinking DJ Moore, because look, he's out there by himself. There's single high man coverage. Boom, that sort of helps him to understand ball got to come out now. So you're walking him through this when you get him in the building early. As you get deeper into the process of training camp, now he should be able to answer a lot of those questions. Now, I'm going to send you home. Let me get how your teacher send you home with homework.
Yeah, the homework.
Do you sit there and do the homework by yourself, or do you call your parents in there? At some point, you got to do that homework by yourself.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he had. There were moments where he was watching by himself.
Yeah.
But that's not how it always was. That's not how it's designed to get him better, but there's got to be moments where you take ownership of your own work. And just like many of us, when we took homework home, there was, if you came back the next day with no questions for your professor or for your teacher, that means you know the work.
Or forgot to do it.
Or you didn't do it.
that was a lot.
So you should come back with, hey, I saw this. There were a couple of things. You should always come back with more dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
That's if you're a good student.
Yeah,
that means if you're still probing. I'm sure you were. But that, to me, with Caleb Williams default to where I was watching by myself, I said, well, what did you learn? How many questions did you have coming back to your coaching staff? So it said to me that he was not taking ownership for some of the failures that took place last year. In fact, I didn't read that anywhere in the book where he took ownership.
Gotcha. I also want to ask you this, Solomon Wilcots. Aaron Rodgers. I'm at a point, just retire.
You're done, aren't you?
He's not going to win another Super Bowl.
Yeah.
You're going to go to Pittsburgh. A Super Bowl for him in Pittsburgh would be winning a playoff game, because they haven't done it in like 8 or 9 years now.
Yeah.
And you're going to be doing this half-assed. Like right now, he just doesn't want to go to any of this offseason crap. Okay, you're a veteran, I get it. But he's not, no disrespect, to safety or wide receiver. Like, you're the quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
You got to be there for these things. And that's why I'm done with Rodgers.
You sound like my good friend Andrew Filipponi for 97.3 The Fan in Pittsburgh. He says, look, we don't see anything recently in Aaron Rodgers' career to believe that he can come walking in at a late phase in June and lead this team to the playoffs. We saw a decline in his play even in the final year in Green Bay. We know that he was hurt for the entire 2023 season. We know that he struggled last year, particularly when they went across the pond to play the Vikings. And I thought Brian Flores' defense just defended him perfectly. He threw a couple of pick sixes. I know he threw one pick six early in the game, but threw two interceptions in that game, including one at the final end of it. Absolutely, late in the game. And then, you know, he had to go get his friend Davante Adams just to have some semblance of success at the end. His ability to help a young wide receiver in Garrett Wilson, I thought, to me, was the most disappointing part of it, because it showed me that as much as I like Aaron Rodgers, he's not open to new learning. And I don't care who you are, I don't care how great you've been. Even Tom Brady at the end with Bruce Arians, he knew there had to be some new learning, some new adjustment. That's why he was able to win a Super Bowl. You think Matthew Stafford had all the answers when he got out to L.A.? And no, he learned from Sean McVay. They won a Super Bowl as soon as he arrived. And I think that's what Aaron Rodgers hoped would have happened going to the New York Jets, and it didn't. And now he's going to Pittsburgh. It's what it looks like. All the breadcrumbs sort of lead us to that.
I'd be shocked if it, like, what, are you going to go into the season with Mason Rudolph as your starting quarterback?
There you go. So I think it's a done deal. He said the people who need to know, know. How much time? He didn't. He came out. He was throwing the ball to DK Metcalf. Metcalf gets a contract extension. He didn't throw the ball to George Pickens.
Yeah.
So Pickens got traded. These are breadcrumbs that tells us where this is all going. I just know that when Aaron gets there, Aaron is not open to new learning. From everything we're hearing from Andrew Filippone and those who are close to the Steelers, that Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, is going to build it around him. And I'm just like, okay, what new? Where's the nuance? What novel approach are we taking with Aaron Rodgers and within the offense to make him better, to make the team better? I have not heard that yet. But, you know, I do trust in Mike Tomlin. I trust in the Steelers. They are a really good organization.
Yeah.
No team has more Vince Lombardi trophies than they do.
Mm-hmm.
No team has had fewer coaches over the longer period.
Don't forget about the Patriots.
They don't have as they.
No, they're tied. I know.
No one has more.
Yeah. I know.
No one has more.
I just
got to
mention that they're tied, though.
But no one has more. Fair statement.
Yeah. That's 100% true.
There you go. So that's where I'm at. That if this is the route they decide to take, I'm like Andrew Filippone.
Mm-hmm.
If you were selling me stock in Aaron Rodgers, I would do a hold.
Yeah.
I wouldn't be buying anymore.
I would say let's tank. Let's get an actual quarterback next year.
I wouldn't fail. See, I don't know that I would fail. Only reason why, it's the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Mm-hmm. Pickleballneed.com. We'll talk about it in just a second. Zimmer Biomet, Sam Wilcott's in studio with us for a few more moments. Brock Purdy, the $53 million a year contract. I thought it was going to be $53.5 million. I put that out a month ago, so I was a half million
wrong.
You're
off by $500,000.
So Brock Purdy may need to be begging for some money to get it up to what I thought it was going to be. How do you think we're talking about him at the end of the season?
I like Brock Purdy. And you know why? Because, first of all, I liked him coming out. I watched him a lot at Iowa State. I didn't think he deserved to fall to the seventh round. I knew he was better than being Mr. Irrelevant, the last player picked in the entire draft. You know, the first quarterback picked that year in the draft? About a guy by the name of Kenny Pickett.
Oh, yeah.
And he was the last quarterback and the last player picked in that draft. Think about where they're at today.
Oh, my God.
Think about that.
I'd be starting to Cleveland.
That's our league, though. Mm-hmm. If the cream does rise to the top, if you have the goods, they're going to find you. He knew how to play under center. He knew how to throw in rhythm. Mm-hmm. He knew the progressionary reads and how to come off the guy and go to the third guy if it's not there early. He's a really fast processor. And if you talk to the guys on that team from the very first day in the huddle, he told every guy, shut up, I got to call this play.
Yeah.
This dude's like the seventh round pick. Yeah. He's telling veteran dudes, shut up, I got to call. He knows who he is.
And not only that, they loved him so much.
That's right.
They got rid of Trey Lance in a second, and let's be real, Trey Lance never really got an opportunity.
He saved the organization from a bad pick and from giving up multiple first-round picks. He saved that organization. That's what he did. And then 2023, he ended up putting up record numbers. No quarterback in NFL history had yards per pass attempt like what he had that year. No quarterback in franchise history had the passing yards that he had. Not even Joe Montana, not even Steve Young. So he's already proven to be a franchise player for that organization. So I think moving forward now, it's really about his continued growth and development. And where else would you rather be? Planet in the Garden with Kyle Shanahan, throwing to George Kittle, throwing to the receivers that they had, and handing the ball off to Christian McCaffrey.
They've got to be healthy.
It's pretty good.
Their schedule is the easiest in the league. I think they should win 11, 12 games.
I can think of a lot worse places to be as a quarterback, right?
One more for you. Mm-hmm. McCarthy with the Vikings, because I look at three names I'm intrigued by this year. Ben Johnson, Brock Purdy, and then J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
That team with that defense, you mentioned Flores. Flores has been incredible there. And offensively, I believe J.J. McCarthy could be a damn good quarterback there.
I'm just saying this. If we were buying stock in a guy, that's the guy. It's a buy.
Mm.
And here's why. He was taught by one of the really great coaches at that position at the collegiate level in Jim Harbaugh. What do I mean by that? He learned how to play under center. Quarterbacks aren't learning that today anymore coming into our game. And what that does, it helps with your footwork. It helps with your timing and your rhythm in the passing game. That's why when you saw him in that one preseason game, and I know it was just a preseason game, but did you see how efficient he was? Did you see the rhythm in which big plays all over the place? And he was dropping it on the dime. And so that's what I expect to see more of that. I think equally, Kevin O'Connell has been phenomenal at working with these quarterbacks. You saw it with Sam Darnold. You saw it the year before, not just with Kirk Cousins, but the way they had four different quarterbacks that year and still just barely missed the playoffs. So Kevin O'Connell deserves a lot of credit for his ability to make players better at that position. And it certainly doesn't hurt when you're throwing to Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison and Jalen Naylor, right? And TJ Hockenson. It's a really good offense, surrounded by really good players. JJ McCarthy has everything he need, I think, to have a really great 2025 season in Minnesota.
All right, yeah, I'm sure J.J. McCarthy probably likes to play pickleball. I'm sure he could also hit up Zimmer Biomet with some of the injuries that he had last year. Mm-hmm. We got Dr. Roshan Shah in studio and also Solomon Wilcots. Gentlemen, the floor is yours. Tell us what we got cooking this weekend.
Well, first of all, we're here to talk about joint health. And look, I'm a veteran of joint replacement surgery. You know, most people, at least over 500 million people, suffer from some kind of arthritis in the joint around the globe every year. Less than 5% actually go to get something done about it. That means a lot of people are out there suffering. And I brought with me a really good friend, Dr. Shah, who can tell you a little bit more about what Zimmer Biomet is doing to help those people out.
Yeah, Zach, thanks for the thanks for having us here.
Sure.
I mean, you know, this is fantastic that Zimmer is here. They're supporting pickleball because this is where people are. At this age group, being active, staying active, and they're taking an investment in their future and their lives. Mobility matters more than anything else. Staying mobile, staying active, building your muscle, building your bone density, working on your balance. That's what's going to keep people going. You hear about health span. This is what's going to keep people going in their 80s and 90s. So what we're here to talk about is arthritis and dispel some of the myths about how people have to live with it. A lot of those 500 million people, they don't even seek treatment, do they, Solomon?
That's right. No, they don't.
And so what? And the reasons they don't is they're worried about pain. They're worried about, you know, the outcome and the recovery process. But with knee replacement, with partial knee replacement, it's really a resurfacing. You get to keep so much of the knee, and it can give you function, and get rid of that pain, so you can maintain your activity and your mobility.
And if people are suffering from knee pain, what they should do is look for a doctor. Yeah. They can also go to the website at www.pickleballknee.com to find a doctor in their area, to find out more about the procedure. What we're finding out is that if you take care of this in the earlier phase of the process, your chance of recovery and being able to return to having the vitality that you want in your life, being able to return to playing pickleball and doing other things and playing other sports, what people tend to do is just wait. And they suffer through pain. They're not getting sleep. That's where I was at, wasn't sleeping very well. And I went and took care of it, talked to my doctor. He says, look, I'm not going to tell you to get joint replacement. You're going to have to tell me when you want it. And I was like, look, let's get this thing done now. And because I was healthy, I was still in good shape. I didn't wait till I got to the lowest level of health to go limping in. I went ahead and got it done, and the recovery was much faster. And I was able to get back to playing golf, playing pickleball, and doing the things that I love doing so much faster. So we want people to be aware of that and not be afraid of this process. Go to the website at www.pickleballknee.com to find a doctor, find out more about the procedure.
And a big part of this, if I can just add to that, think about a tricycle. You know, it's got three tires. Everybody thinks about a knee replacement as replacing all three of those. You don't have to. You can replace just one. That's a partial knee replacement. There's new technology out right now from Zimmer Biomet. PressFit technology, where the bone grows onto the implant, it lasts longer in our studies, and it's a smaller operation. That's the thing. You get to it early, you're not going to have the bigger problems later on.
And also tomorrow, you can go check out the Zimmer Biomet APP New York City Open at Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. Once again, you've heard it. Visit for more information if you have some knee issues as well, pickleballknee.com. A lot of issues in the NFL these days with the tush push. 22-10, they kept it, thankfully. Uh-huh. I'm pro tush push. How about yourself?
I'm pro quarterback sneak. You know, I am a football purist. For years, almost 100 years in our sport, you are not allowed to push a runner from behind pull him, right? And I've always been one of these guys that says offenses don't innovate. What they do, they change the rules. And then once they change rules, oh, look what we can do. Well, you changed the rule that allow you to do it. And every time they change rules from a defensive perspective, they take things away from us in terms of what we can't do. Now, I'm not here to argue either offense or defense. I'm about the game. But I do believe that the push from behind, allowing that, has opened up a Pandora's box for a lot of other things that we're not currently talking about. And I think that's why you found 22 teams actually voted to ban that portion of the play, not the total play. And they missed it by, if they would have had two more votes, then they would have just removed the part where you're pushing Jalen Hurts from behind. That's the only thing. But by allowing it, now let's ask ourselves what comes next. Frankie LeVue diving over the top. Oh, he hit your quarterback, and now your quarterback goes down. You know what people are going to say? You shouldn't be able to dive over the top and hit my quarterback like that. Well, that's actually a legal play. You created something that's problematic by taking something that was once not legal and then making it legal. And then when the argument came to put it back the way that it was, we said, no, let's keep it that way. And okay, but the theory of unintended consequences is going to lead to something else coming that defensive coaches, I can tell you right now, they're going to come up with something to stop it. And during the trial and error, I think it creates a more unsafe environment.
They just got in my ear. There's already 400 Philadelphia Eagles fans lining up outside the studio.
Cool.
They want to
beat
you
up. Well, you got to know the rules of the game. We're only playing by the rules of the game.
Once again, pickleballknee.com. Doc Solomon, always great to see you guys. Appreciate you
Zach,
coming on.
Zach, you
in.
Are the best, my friend. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much. All right, we'll take a time out. This is Zach Gelb Show right here on the Infinity Sports Network. All right, it is the Zach Gelb Show on the Infinity Sports Network. I was reading something today on CBS Sports. And they ranked all the coaches in the Power Four in college football. And listen to the top 10. These are the top 10 coaches in college football. Now remember, you had Nick Saban retire. You had Jim Harbaugh go back to the NFL. Like, you've had a lot of big names the last few years leave the college world. But this list, these are the top 10 best coaches in college football. Matt Campbell in at number 10. Now, Matt Campbell started to get back on the right track a few years ago when he's expected to win the Big 12, and he didn't do so, and he was like, oh, those weren't my expectations. Those were your expectations. That was one of the weakest answers I've ever heard. In at number 9 is Kalen DeBoer. Now, Kalen DeBoer at Washington got them to a national championship game. Year 1 at Alabama, he missed the playoffs. Brian Kelly is in at 8. Very good run at Notre Dame. Since then, Notre Dame has got better without him, even though he saved Notre Dame, the football program. And then you look at LSU. Sure, he had a Heisman Trophy winner, but he has not come close to making the playoffs. 7, James Franklin at Penn State. I know James Franklin wins a lot of games. James Franklin doesn't win the big games. And he's right now the 7th best coach in college football? 7? Like, just for starters, wouldn't you rather have Kalen DeBoer over James Franklin? Kalen DeBoer took Washington to a national championship game. I know he just missed a playoff at Alabama, but I would much rather have DeBoer than James Franklin. Marcus Freeman in at 6. Marcus Freeman just got to the national championship game. Dan Lanning is in at 5. First year at Oregon, won the Big Ten. Texas, Sark, last 2 years been very successful. Big 12 champs, and then last year, first year in the SEC, and they ended up getting to the SEC championship game. Dabo Sweeney's in at 3. Ryan Day, who can't beat Michigan, but he won a national championship, is in at 2. And then you do have Kirby Smart in at 1. I think you got to put Dabo still at 2. I'm fine with Day being 3. But you look at this top 10 list, it's not like there's any Sherlock great things outside of Kirby Smart at Georgia. And, right, you know Ryan Day is going to continue to do a great job at Ohio State, just, you know, avoid Michigan, which you can't. And then Clemson, Dabo Sweeney, I think people are back in on the Dabo train. But Sark, now it's go time. Dan Lanning, okay, you won the Big Ten in your first year, but can you go win a national championship? Marcus Freeman, you just got to a national championship. Now can you get back there and win it? James Franklin, can you win a big game? Brian Kelly, can you get LSU to the playoff? Kalen DeBoer, can you go win a national championship at Alabama? And Matt Campbell's in at 10. I would rather have Kyle Whittingham. That's just me. Just off the top of the cabeza, someone else you could throw in. Lincoln Riley's on this list at 13. Lance Leipold is in at 15. Josh Heupel's in at 16. Yeah, Heupel's a solid coach. You got them to the playoff. I think he should be a little bit higher up on this list. Jeff Brom, who joined this the other day, at 17. How about Kenny Dillingham? Now, he's got to have some sustained success, but he's at 18 on this list. Kirk Ferentz at 19. Mario Cristobal at 20. Kurt Cignetti at 21. And we don't have to go through the entirety of this. Norvell fallen, by the way. He's at 25. I think people will be praising Bielma after the year that people think Illinois should have this upcoming season, so we'll see how far he rises up, but he's at 23. Now, no Coach Prime on this list, and also no mention of Belichick as his first year as a college coach, just in the top 25 of the Power Four coaches that were ranked by CBS. They ended up ranking all the other ones as well, and you can find Coach Prime, you can find Belichick on that list somewhere, but you look at that top 10, not a lot of, like, definite those teams, right, you feel great about winning a championship. So this is going to be a big year for the college coaches. Who's going to take that baton and really run with it? Because that top five is right there for the taking. When the top five right now is Lanning, Sark, who's good. Dabo, can you win a national championship again? Ryan Day just won one. And then you got Kirby Smart, who's obviously won two. So not like when I was reading that, I was like, it's not the greatest list in the world, but I can't really freak out and say, any of those guys don't really truly belong in the top 10. All righty, let's take a time out. We'll come on back with a news brief up.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, let's start things off with the coach of the Timberwolves, Chris Finch. This is Coach on his squad going down 0-2 to the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Every minute in the series is a chance to find something, we're going to go back home. This is a good team at home, so we're going to go home and fight for game three. I mean, heads up and look at the tape and get ready for game three.
Yeah, you could get ready for game three, heads up, be fine. I just don't see how you win two games in games three and games four and get this series back to OKC for a 2-2 kind of situation. I think this is going to be 3-1 if it gets to that point, going back to OKC. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, let's hear from him on Chris Paul being courtside at the game last night.
He was the first guy in my life that I was like close with that achieved the things that I wanted to achieve. And I really leaned on him for like advice and not only basketball advice, like business advice, taking care of your body advice, like handling a family when they don't live with you. Like there's so many things that you deal with as an NBA player, especially of his caliber, that go under the radar. His guidance with that has been great. And like I said, not only as all the mentorship and stuff, but just being there as a friend, he's been special.
How awesome would it have been, though, if he said, with all those nice things being said, I just hope I'm able to win six more games. We know Chris wasn't able to. So hopefully I can go get six more victories and then go get my first ever championship. That would have been awesome. He wasn't going to say it because a nice mushy, respectful moment, right? Big factor in your life, Chris Paul, and you just won your first MVP and you're getting that award before the game. I get it, but when I'm thinking, he accomplished like all the things. First guy in my life to accomplish all those things that I knew that I really wanted to accomplish. I'm like, I would have followed up. Hey, you want to win a championship. Well, I think Chris Paul didn't really accomplish all those things. Let's go to Michael Malone. He was on the ESPN. So this is like a whole big stink. I thought it was ridiculous. I said this yesterday. Where Michael Malone's like, that's why SGA is the MVP. And everyone's like, you wouldn't have said that if you saw the coach of the Nuggets or the Nikola Jokic. And look what you said 2 months ago. So Michael Malone has now got into the media world, being an analyst on ESPN for the Western Conference Finals. And I guess he is now seeing the aftermath and the backlash when you say something that you just think is not that big of a deal. And you got to eventually then respond to it. So this is how he elected to clarify what he was saying on ESPN the other night.
When Nikola won the first of his three MVPs, and I did vote for him again this year, if I had a vote, I want to make sure the people in Denver know that, because right now I'm getting a lot of heat back on.
Welcome to TV, Mike.
No doubt, but it does legitimize the performance that you had, but he was such a business mindset, mental approach, it meant nothing to him. He was solely focused on the team goal of winning a championship, not the individual accolade.
Can you play me the beginning again? Just listen to the fake TV laughter that you just hear on this ESPN.
When Nikola won the first of his three MVPs, and I did vote for him again this year, if I had a vote, I want to make sure the people in Denver know that, because right now I'm getting a lot of heat back on.
Welcome to TV, Michael.
Yeah, no doubt, but
all right, I'm good on that. Oh, my God. You would have thought he was like the greatest comedian. Did Bill Burr show up and start being the halftime analyst or the pregame analyst for the Western Conference Finals? Jeez Louise, that's insufferable. Here's Josh Kroenke on Nikola Jokic saying that the team needs more depth.
I heard Jokic's comments loud and clear. I mean, I think that I was thinking that before those words came out of his mouth. Just in how the playoffs have, you know, if you're watching the games, you can see yourself. As well as watching our games, you can see where we leaned on a lot of guys for a lot of minutes in big time moments. And that has a cumulative effect that, you know, when you're playing 7-game series, that can wear you down.
Yeah, when your player says that they need more depth, there's no doubt about it. And let's be real. Like, foreign players usually don't request trades, especially the stars in the NBA that usually request trades. It's usually Americans. Maybe that's going to change this offseason with Giannis Antetokounmpo. I don't think Nikola Jokic is looking to leave, but you got to retool this team. And obviously, you got rid of the coach. You got rid of the GM. They made Adam the full-time coach the other day. But this is really, like, the two people that I think of now with the Nuggets. It's Josh Kroenke and it's Nikola Jokic. And really, the order should be Nikola Jokic and Josh Kroenke, but it's up to Josh Kroenke now to improve this team this offseason. Let's go to Kevin Stefanski. He was on the really big show, a 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. This is Kevin Stefanski and how he will spread out reps for all four quarterbacks.
I tell the players, don't pay attention to where you are in line, because where you are on Tuesday, it may be different Wednesday. So, no, we don't pay close attention to that. Certainly, you have to decide what order the guys are going to go out, and sometimes it may be player X, player Y, whatever it is. The big thing for us is making sure we give the guys enough reps that they need. So making sure that they have enough where both they're learning the system, they're developing, and we're evaluating them. We're finding out more about them. So that's where I said before, it's not going to be everybody gets 25% of these reps. That's not how it's going to be. We want to give everybody enough reps where we can learn more about them and prepare them to get ready to play.
All righty, so we'll see how they divide those up. He's trying to get everyone in position to play. I think the decision should be either Shedeur Sanders, Dylan Gabriel week one. That's what I would do. It probably, though, in all likelihood, is going to be either Joe Flacco or Kenny Pickett would be my guess, though. So, Sant, I got a question for you, because you credited this as the really big show and then 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. Which one was it? Because 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland, I saw Stefanski was on with Ken Carman, and then the really big show is the ESPN affiliate out there. So do you know which one the clip is? Just wondering where it was from.
On the screen it said the really big show, so I'm assuming it's that, but I'll go double check.
Okay, so then that would be ESPN. That would be 92.3 The Fan in Cleveland. I was wondering, because when I read it, I was like, that doesn't really make sense. Anyway, let's go to Jerry Jones. I have not heard this yet. Here is Jerry Jones on the Tush Push vote.
Here we are, the world champion. It is the main focus of the Tush Push. And here we are debating it and having to decide, am I really against the Tush Push or just don't want Philadelphia to have it? I sit there and fight that, too.
Which one do you think it is?
When they're making presentation.
Which one is it for you?
I don't know. I flip-flop.
I'll tell you. You know who I want to hear Jerry Jones be interviewed by on our network? If I had one host interview Jerry Jones, Samter, who do you think the one host would be?
Bart?
Nico?
Shep.
Bingo. When Shep did that show from his grandmother's house and he had to whisper, which I thought was hilarious and it was good, I don't know. I just think the voices of Shep and Jerry Jones, and you would have no clue what the heck that they're talking about. Shep, reach out to the Cowboys. Get Jerry Jones on. I think it would be great if we got Shep and Jerry Jones. Because Shep does like that little whisper thing. Jerry Jones, he kind of does that little whisper thing as well when they would talk. I think the two of them in studio would make for like a great hour. You know, I would like to hear that on our network. Let's go to George Kittle, NBC Sports. How has Brock Purdy grown?
One thing I've already seen from Brock this offseason, just being back around for all of OTAs and stuff, is just his voice is heard significantly more in the building, which I love. Whether he's breaking down the team, talking in the locker room, sitting guys, he's always kind, he's always nice to everybody, but he's just more vocal to everybody in team settings, which is huge. And people, you know, when they hear the quarterback talk, your head kind of snaps. Like, that's what you listen for, because he's like the face, the leader of the team. And so when you have a guy like that who's continually growing, and how old is Brock, 25, 26? It's awesome to see a young guy just, you know, keep his feet in the ground and then, like, want to work hard and want to make all the guys around him really good. So that's one of the things I've just been happy with seeing.
Yeah, I would hope he could do all those things at $53 million a year. Alrighty, let's get a little hockey into the mix. You want to talk about the Timberwolves series being over up against Oklahoma City, which I said earlier. As OKC is going to go to the NBA Finals up 2-0. The Florida Panthers, they're up 2-0 against the Carolina Hurricanes. The Carolina Hurricanes are a very good team, but the last few years you've seen they have limitations. Like, they always lose to the Rangers in the playoffs. Rangers not in the playoffs this year because the Rangers stunk. So they find a way to get, take out the Capitals with Ovechkin. All right. And then you go up against the Florida Panthers. The Panthers are easily the best team in hockey. It doesn't mean they're going to win the cup, but look how great that core is. And then they added Brad Marchand. That's just unfair. But they had a big third period the other night. And then yesterday, they just dominated the Hurricanes to take a 2-0 series lead. And they blanked them, shut them out 5-0. Let's hear Alexander Barkov get a goal on this one. This is Dougie Plagen of the Panthers Radio Network.
Ekblad across to the right point. Long shot. He scores from out at the right point. Ekblad put it to the net. Barkov was right in front. And the Panthers take a 5-0 lead. A power play goal. A deflection from the captain.
And I know that, right? 3-0 lead in hockey is never safe. But when that was, like, I think a minute or two into the game, Gustav Forsling had a goal. And then after that, Tkachuk and Bennett get on the board before the end of the period. Well, that's 3-0 going into the second period. You knew it was night-night. And then Sam Bennett got a goal in the second. And then Barkov, you just heard that on the power play, did get a goal in the third to make it 5-0. So the defending Stanley Cup champions are probably going back to the Stanley Cup final. 5-2, 5-0 were those games for the Florida Panthers in Carolina taking care of business. And I guess that's what happens when you get Manny Diaz in the building to try to hype up the crowd, back in game one. So, geez Louise. And it was 2-1 in game one. Then it went to 3-1. And then in the third period, they ended up getting two more goals, and they ended up winning the game 5-2.
I mean, if you think about their last three games, including game seven when they knocked out the Leafs, 16-3 in the last three games, goals for the Florida Panthers.
Yeah, and they're the deepest team in hockey, and we'll see who they end up getting. Will it be the Oilers, and you get a rematch of the Stanley Cup Final, or it'd be Pete DeBoer's year as the Stars, they take game one, and you get game number two coming up tonight between the Oilers and the Stars right at 8 p.m. Eastern time. Onside, offside next, it is the Zach Gelb Show.